messed up. Advanced Year Catholic Biblical School, Orange Workbook, Unit 1 Review. Questions, comments, insights into your study of the Book of Wisdom? Anybody want to chime in on that?
I've noticed it speaks a lot about the afterlife and about...
Yes.
And about searching for the holiness, you know, and most importantly, searching for God.
How according to this author, how do we achieve immortality, would you say? And this isn't just for Anne, this is for...
Fear of the Lord and righteousness.
Reverence of God.
Right. Right. And is this something that...
It's a gift.
It's a gift. I think that's kind of what I was going for, because it's not for everybody. it's for those who live in friendship with God. That's the term. Friendship is big in this book, and that's the term they use. In Ben Sira, I would say communion with God. For the author of the Book of Wisdom, it's really fellowship with God, friendship with God, you know, and that God wills to be friends with everyone, but not everyone accepts that invitation. And so it's a different way of looking at it's, did you notice how the author of this book incorporates the ideas of the Greek culture and sort of melds them in with Jewish ideas and the Jewish tradition in your reading? Mm-hmm. Some folks were saying they were having difficulty with the last question. That's what it was getting at, was that, I think the question reads, the Book of Wisdom incorporates positive elements of the culture of its day to enhance an understanding of Jewish faith. Give at least one example from the Book of Wisdom. So that's what they were asking for. You know, how does he incorporate what is good in Greek culture into his understanding of how to live a good life and to achieve immortality? So that would have been one answer you could have. The idea of the immortality of the soul, while it's not exactly the same as Hellenistic culture, he incorporates that idea into his work, and that would have been one answer. Mm-hmm. Did anybody else? A couple people told me they had trouble with that. Was that troublesome to more of you as well, or is it just unclear?
Yeah, I think it was more ambiguous. You know, it was hard to pinpoint exactly what the question was focusing on.
Sure. Sure, so that's why I decided I'd have to see if I could clarify it. What did you say, Jim?
I took a different tack on it.
Oh, okay. How did you? Well, I'll read it in your homework. Yeah. I do think that there's some ambiguity in the question, but that I think is what was being.
In fact, in this
asked.
Lesson, I found that a lot of the questions in parts A and B,
mm-hmm.
They were interconnected,
mm-hmm.
That there were overlaps in
the answer from A and the answer for B, that they were maybe...
In fact, in one of the questions...
Five, I think.
I don't know, the one where... whether choose one of the suffering, childlessness, or early death. I compared childlessness and early death and brought out that the answers the references are interconnected,
mm-hmm.
and gave you two columns and invited you to see where I found overlaps.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Necessary.
Okay. Okay. All right then.
And wisdom could be interpreted by many people differently.
Well, yes.
Well, yes. Okay.
I mean, the Book of Wisdom or wisdom in general.
The, don't you think?
Well, explain a little more what you mean, please.
Sometimes when I find a parallel that I thought was pretty clear, nobody else saw that one. Maybe it's not. But it depends on when you're reading it, what you're going to...
what you're bringing to it.
Yeah.
It's a connection. It is a two-way street. The Word of God happens when my world meets the biblical world and God works there and makes something happen. So you're bringing a different you to the text than Jennifer is or Annie Marie or Epi. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I still think that if there's questions, we'll be able to come up with the answer.
Well, there certainly are. There are definitely right answers and wrong answers to some of these questions, for sure. They definitely, you know, there may not just be one right answer. There are multiple meanings. There's always, remember, a surplus of meaning, and you may be connecting on one level with the text, and someone else may be connecting on another level, and they may both be textually valid. They may, they may both be in there, and I promise when I read your papers, I'll tell you if you're off the wall. Usually you're not. You guys are usually on target, so I wouldn't worry too much about that. I promise to keep you from going too far astray, Sandy.
Okay.
All right.
Somebody needs to.
Oh no. Well, I can't promise to that extent. But so anything else about this book that you'd like to just review or this lesson?
Well, I found that the book, without it, I have difficulty understanding how the Protestants don't include this book and Sirach in the canon, because it's so much tied to the concepts of the afterlife, immortality, it's that transition, and Jesus.
Yeah, there is, and you know, that's partly a product, I think, of the closeness in time to the life of Jesus.
Yeah.
That's part, you know, we're really seeing how people took the earlier traditions and, you know, made them present in a new way in the time. And Jesus was, that's the time, you know, we're very close with the Book of Wisdom to the time of Jesus. So, and, you know, but I agree with you that I think we lose a lot, but, you know, by not prayerfully considering these books. Our daily readings this week are out of the Book of Wisdom.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yes,
it was very convenient.
It happens now and then. They converge like that. I think actually the authors did make an attempt that way, but it didn't always work out, I suspect. Okay, so I'd like to start our review. Excuse me. And I want you to take this striped piece of paper.
I forgot to pick it up.
Oh, would you grab them? Thank you so much, Tracy. There should be enough for everybody. And also, did you get the suggested answers, Annie Marie?
Yeah, I didn't get the suggested answers.
You did, but you missed the...
I didn't get the answers because I had a race to the lab. You know,
oh, well, they'll still, you know, we'll still have them. Thank you. Does anybody else need? Are you going to give that to Annie?
Yes,
thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Anybody else need this?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, here's what I want to do. As you know, we've studied 6 books this unit, and 5 of them are wisdom literature. I'm going to tell you the test is definitely more focused on the wisdom literature than it is on Habakkuk. So what I want to do is divide you up into teams of 2. One of you will be by yourself because somebody's missing. We should have 12 and we only have 11. That's all right. The color of your bingo sheet determines who you're going to work with.
Oh, we're friends.
Okay, so what I want you to do, we're going to do the first, we're going to do Habakkuk together, and then we're going to, I'm going to ask you to just complete, you know, working with the person that you have the same color of bingo sheet. I want you to, and you'll have to move around probably and stuff, but not, let's wait a moment to do that. I'm going to ask you to fill out the two columns in your row, right? That, and the first column that you have to fill out is just identifying some of the key characteristics of this book. You don't have to write them all down, just, you know, two or three things that, you know, that will, or sort of memory devices for you. This is what I remember about the book of Habakkuk, right? Or we're going to do Habakkuk together. And then I want you to take a next step. At the second column, I want you to write out some contributions that this book makes that, you know, maybe builds on other books, but what's uniquely, what's a unique contribution or advancement or development of ideas or the practice of the faith of Israel's faith that you find in this book? So how, the question really is, how does each idea presented in contribute to the development of Israel as a people or to the development of Israel's wisdom, theology, practice of the faith? You know, so how is this book important? How is this book making a contribution to the canon in your eyes? And just again, one or two ways that you see your the book you're working on, you know, contributing to the canon. So, and you don't have to worry because I'm going to give you one. It's not complete. This is not complete. This is an example that you could do for all of them. I'm going to give this to you later. But I, yeah. So you don't have to worry about writing everybody's down. But, you know, just take your time to, you know, think about your particular book that you've been assigned, which, but let's start so you know what I'm asking for. I just want to do Habakkuk together. Now, let me just make sure. Wait a minute. We've got pink, green, purple, orange.
I have blue.
Blue.
Who else is the dangle?
Aw, you're the yellow one.
Uh-huh.
And yellow. You know, we have six in this class. I gave out all six. So I'm gonna I take that back. We're not gonna do Habakkuk together. So since we're not gonna do one together, tell me, are these instructions clear?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So
we do all of the books.
Nope. You're doing one book.
We only do one of these books.
Yes. Yeah, so the green people are going to do the Wisdom of Solomon. That's you and
Watch
Jennifer
out.
Together, okay? The pink people are going to do Ben Sira. So that's Tracy, and who else says
and
pink?
Jim.
Okay.
Like
who?
Vision and pink.
Indeed, as always. So green, Koheleth. So, oh, wait a minute, I already did green, sorry. All right, purple, Koheleth. So Phyllis, and who else has purple? And Donna, okay. Job will do, who has, yeah, blue and blue, Tom and Annie Marie, and Proverbs, we haven't done yellow yet, right?
Right.
Proverbs, yellow. Is there somebody, orange, Effie, you get to do Habakkuk, and if you get done early, you can join Joan, and because there's not as much, it's a small book.
What am I doing?
Habakkuk.
Koheleth?
Habakkuk.
Doesn't remember that one.
No, not Proverbs.
No, Habakkuk.
Okay.
The first one on the list.
Okay, so, and we're going to just take 5 minutes and work together. Like I said, you don't have to get everything. I just wanted to give a few points in each column, and then we'll come back together. Okay, so 5 minutes. Once you've joined with your partners. So, like I said, the idea is not to get a complete answer. You know, to fill it up and have all the answers. I don't know if there's a possibility of that. Honestly, you know. There's always so much more. There's always more to be discovered. So let's look at our sheet, and let's start with Habakkuk because it's the shortest and the simplest. Epi, you had to work by yourself. But I
terrible. At least just what you wanted.
There you go, Jim. Very good. So,
I couldn't come to an agreement.
No, you split. You're divided. Yes. So, what are some of the key characteristics? Some of the basic information about the book of Habakkuk that we learned this year.
You know, I couldn't remember much, so I looked at.
That's fine.
No, but I couldn't come up with it. I mean, I concentrated on the second column.
Okay, so you didn't. There was nothing that you could really come up with. That how is it different than any of the other books that we studied this unit?
Not necessarily. It's more as a minor prophet.
Exactly.
It's
so
a
that's
minor prophet. It's not wisdom.
Right. Right. And yet he asks questions similar to what we find Job probing, especially. Mm-hmm. So in a way, I don't know if you remember, we talked about this as a. This book is being really on the like a hinge between traditional theology and questing theology, between the prophets and the wisdom literature. And if you remember the historical context, they're right on the cusp of the exile. So it's between the monarchy and the exile. He was right on that edge between, you know, probably the biggest historical change in the situation of Israel in the entire biblical period. So I try and remember the hinge, like a door hinge. It brings two things together. That's the way to remember that. Okay, very good, very good. So tell me, what were some of the contributions and characteristic teachings that you identified?
Some of the questions that he pondered is based on the experience that he sits around. You know,
yes.
Why did the wicked thrive and the righteous
exactly.
suffer and is oppressed?
Precisely.
He was contemplating on either whether it was Babylon or whether it's the oppressors within Israel itself is
yep.
completely not known, but... Charlie, he was looking at those, you know, those
yes.
people who are selected, and God allows that. So what is going on here?
Exactly.
So the whole issue of retribution, justice, that kind of thing is coming.
Precisely.
So ultimately, he seems to be on the line of saying justice will prevail because God is just.
Right. He does rest in that, but he still seems worried.
To mm-hmm. ponder about is, you know, the faith and righteousness, you know, that relationship, which seemed to be picked up by Paul later on.
Yes.
About the issue of that the righteousness will live because of his faith.
That's...
So he's kind of promoting kind of the whole idea of...
That's interesting. Go ahead,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
I think, you know, I guess Paul is picking some of that, so I guess some of the contribution that you
That's very interesting. Was there a particular place that you found that?
I think it's Habakkuk 2:4.
Okay.
He says, "The just one who is righteous because of his faith shall live."
Yeah, okay.
Which is, you know,
okay.
Justification by faith.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of connected to that.
Good for you. That's fantastic. That's really...
So basically, you know, he's trusting in God that God is just.
Exactly.
Even though justice is not apparent to us, if we are patient, I guess God will take care of things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, very well said. Very, very well said. Okay, and since we're a little low on time, we'll move quickly through this. So who had Proverbs? Joan and Elaine? So go ahead, tell us what, first the key characteristics or the basic information about the book that you remember.
Some of the things were a number of different themes, like the fool versus the wise, creation, justice in the poor, and a lot of everyday concerns, daily living concerns.
Absolutely, very, very practical. The bottom line for all of wisdom literature is practical, but you really see it in Proverbs. It really comes to the fore. And some contributions that Proverbs makes that for our faith or for the faith of the time and for our faith.
You want to address that one, or
should you should. Well, you haven't written. One of we talked about was the fact that the leaders were taught, the scribes, not scribes.
But it was like the court officials,
mm-hmm.
religious leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's part of the official curriculum, so to say.
Right. So the education is the beginnings of a more formal education. Process in it reflects that in Israel. Good. That's the movement part of wisdom.
And there was a great deal of God's influence in your everyday life, and the importance of going to Him with your needs and bringing Him into your interactions with other people.
Right. So an openness really to the divine. As you're walking through your daily life, kind of, they're both, you know, that they come together.
The way that is presented, almost, you can't separate them.
Right.
It's like, it's just,
yes.
I don't think for the people at the time there would even be this observation because it's
absolutely
it's just the way it is.
I think you've really got that. I think that really is an important insight because we have this. Oh, this is secular and this is religious, and it's part of our culture to really separate those out. But I think your insight is correct that in this time, you know, in the biblical time period, they were really not, there was no distinction. So you could all, you know, they were really two aspects of the same whole being of each person living in community. So I think it's a good insight. Okay, so. Who had the book of Job? Was that you, Tom, and Annie Marie? Okay.
The key characteristics. Faith is tested, challenges God, claims blameless or innocence, rash judgment by wife and friends.
Okay, rash judgment by wife and friends. You betcha. Good. And some contributions?
Faith is tested to produce purification. He challenges God. Humans may question God, but not equate themselves or test God. Claims innocence or blamelessness. He is stout-hearted and pure unto himself. And rash judgment by friends. Being human, they are being human, the friends and the wife, and Job needed to be tested by his peers.
That's really interesting. I tell me more about how you about the idea of purification that you saw. Is that from the perspective of Job, or is that from the perspective of his friends?
Job, I believe, he's sufferings, mm-hmm. those physical sufferings.
Mm-hmm. Does Job ever say that it's a purification process?
No, I think the purification comes from God.
Does God call it a purification?
No, but you can read into it.
You'd be careful because I think the book is really clear that Job doesn't need purifying in the sense that he's innocent. He's been declared innocent. So the idea of suffering as purification, I don't think it's completely off base. I just think that's not central to the book. I think that we are told very clearly that Job is. If you're using the sense of purification in the sense of, you know, innocent, then you might need a different word, because that's what I'm suggesting. Because the idea of purification suggests that purging the sin from within us, you know, and Job does grow, and that's what I would, you know, I'd like to, you know, talk. Use a word that talks about how Job grows in his relationship. I really like this one thing that you said in particular about his righteousness was his, you know, he held on very tightly to his righteousness. It was from himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that his relation, what part of the way he grows in faith may very well be that recognizing that God is the source of righteousness. Again, you know, but I just that one little qualification. Okay. All right, my friends. Koheleth. Who did Koheleth? Donna and Phyllis?
One of the basic information is that we never really know God's wisdom.
Right.
To enjoy life for tomorrow's, you know, you could die. Pessimistic viewpoint.
That's pessimistic. Pessimism. But there, but you also you said, repeat what you just said the, about joy.
Well, enjoying life.
Enjoying life.
Tomorrow, you know, live. What is it? How do you say it?
Like enjoy today.
Yeah, live for today because tomorrow you could be dead.
That's right. Which you know sounds pessimistic, but there is remember also a, there is sort of a, an optimistic way also that some scholars interpret it too that. Recognition that the day is to be enjoyed. So
yeah. Which is the good part. Yeah.
We do tend to sort of you know, and I think both are important. Some contributions or things that this book brings to the development of its of the faith of the Jewish people or to you know our own faith. What are some contributions this book brings?
They fear God despite vanity.
Say that again?
They fear God despite vanity.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, they're faithful despite...
right. There's a... Okay, no, I like that, yeah.
They do question belief in God. This is when they first start to really question it.
Does he question a belief in God or just a question a belief that we can know what God's doing?
Yeah, it's to know what God's...
Yeah, I think that he firmly believes that God exists. I don't think that, you know, we're quite there yet. Certainly that's an issue in our own times. But I do think that there, it's very clear that if God didn't exist, this guy would have less trouble because he would just say, okay, eat, drink, and marry, tomorrow you die, and that would be it. His problem is he knows there's God and he knows there's an order in life, right? And no matter how hard he tries, he can't figure it out. That's his, I think, maybe his deepest angst is that he can't figure it out, right? Okay, anything else?
Just that you have to be able to see the negative in life to appreciate the positive.
I like that. That's good. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in all these books. Fantastic. Okay. All right, so now Ben Sira. Who has Ben Sira? Uh-huh. Go
and
for it.
And giving up the patristic view, I am... yielding to.
Very nice.
Well, very kind of you, Jim, yes.
Feel free to jump in.
Besides, she writes. I'm a contributing editor.
She's the writer. Okay.
She's the scribe.
There you go. I like that.
Well, the key basic information and key characteristics of Ben Sira was that it there was more of an appreciation of traditional wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
Yep.
It was written by a scribe and teacher and then translated into Greek
mm-hmm.
by a grandson of Alexandria for Jews in that community.
Good.
And it had a big theme of the fear of the Lord. The biggest contributions to the teachings of the book was that the fear of the Lord was the root, the source of wisdom. Not the beginning of wisdom that Proverbs was talking about,
right.
But it's the source. And he equates wisdom with the law. That, you know, keeping wisdom, you know, following the wisdom tradition leads to keeping the law. There is the concept of folly becomes sin. So if you don't follow wisdom, it's a sin. True wisdom is found in Israel. Urges people to stay true to the Jewish tradition. And there's a struggle with the identity of Jews in Hellenistic society. And so it urges people to remain true to this tradition.
Absolutely. Okay, very good, very good. And Wisdom of Solomon.
I'll do it first, if that's easy. Okay. One of the last books written before Christ.
Right.
It was the Hellenistic blending of the Jewish culture.
Mm-hmm.
And it spoke about the mercy of God. Those were our basic information
cool.
things.
Those are good. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. And so how do you see this contributing to the canon, to the faith, the development of the people in Israel?
The idea that through wisdom we gain moderation, prudence, righteousness, and fortitude. And
the cardinal virtues.
Yes.
We found them.
This is
yes.
the first that we know of, first mention of those four virtues in as a grouping. And they are later come to be called the cardinal virtues. Very good. Anything else?
Immortality is a gift for those in friendship or fellowship with God.
Perfect.
However.
However, I like however. There we go. We have to dig in.
Discussing. We go from Koheleth, who has no belief in the afterlife.
Right.
Mm-hmm. To now we're talking about.
Yeah.
As if it's in a
done deal. Right.
Right. So how do we get from here to here?
And that is a really good question. We don't really have the evidence to track it and to, you know, see how it came to be. But if you look at the, you know, and there are scholars who have done this, if you look carefully at passages that talk about life, that talk about life to the fullness, what you find is that there are sort of hints, and it's really all we get are hints as to how that development took place. Here we have a very interesting idea of immortality that is has similarities with what we've come to believe, but there are also differences. I think he talks about, you know, I was given a noble soul. So there's a hint, for example, in wisdom that the soul may have preexisted the body, and that on the, you know, that's not really, I mean, that. We don't, the preexistence of the soul is not really part of our teaching. But generally speaking, there's a lot there that we can really resonate with, right? That the friends of God are those who are gifted with, through the gift of wisdom, they become immortal. They are given the gift of eternal life. That, you know, there's a lot to connect with, but it's very different from other strands of the ideas of about afterlife that really dominate the Jewish faith and become, you know, the basis for the Pharisees' belief in a resurrection. This is not a resurrection, really. This is a belief in the immortality of the soul. Whereas when we read Daniel, the book of Daniel, in chapter 12, verse 2 especially, but that passage there, you'll find that the focus is on rising, on the resurrection, which it does come to be more, you know, that idea about afterlife is really what grounds the New Testament understanding contemporary with Jesus, and then, of course, through Jesus' resurrection in Christianity. So you've got at least two different, not totally incompatible, but different ideas about afterlife in these late Old Testament books. And, you know, how one came to prevail over another, you know, how they were emerged from the tradition where, you know, Koheleth could not take, you know, he couldn't believe it. He, you know, he sets it forth and says that can't happen. And Job does the same thing. But, and like I said, we can't track it. But there are certain ideas in the Old Testament that seem to push us forward towards this kind of belief, through which I believe, you know, the Holy Spirit was inspiring people to become receptive to it. An example of that would be in the Psalms and in, you know, in the Torah itself too. The recognition of God as the source of all life and the beauty of communion with God, and, you know, even in Ben Sira we get that. You know, he's another one who can't make it to the, but we see sort of hints of how it develops, and in that sort of recognition that God is life, then surely God must be able to overcome death. You see, it's sort of you can see sort of how the Holy Spirit is revealing and drawing and cultivating a hope that you know, that develops finally into a belief. But we don't have We can't say exactly how they got from A to B. Okay. Yes?
In Genesis, with the creation of man and woman, God is created in, you know, we are created in his image. How could the image of God, you know, have death in it?
Well, and that's kind of what...
And actually that particular phrase, you know, it's kind of set out that it's lifted from someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And put in there. And then also in Cain and Abel, you know, God is hearing, and is it the soul or anima coming from dead Abel's blood?
Right. So the blood is crying out.
That there is an anima. And
yeah.
That it's still crying out after the guy is...
There you go. There you go. So, yeah, and I think, like, Enoch, the tradition, do you remember Enoch and who was taken?
Yes.
And it just kind of just this mysterious taking into to God. God took him to himself. There's, you know, there are a number of things. And then there's also this whole questing spirit of, like, Job, where, you know, we don't see how justice, you know, it comes about in this life, you know, but if God is just, then how can that be the case? And so I think what we see in Ben Sira is he pushes that to, well, at the moment of death, you know, you're going to pay for it, you know, it's like, but if there's no afterlife, you know.
Right. You can see how this questioning of retributive justice evolves into something
yes.
that says, well, maybe there's something more, because
mm-hmm.
we know that people who are righteous in this life suffer, and that doesn't equate with what we understand with Proverbs saying, well, if you do well, if you follow,
yes.
do right things, you're going to be blessed, you won't have suffering.
Right.
And if you do wicked things, you're going to suffer. When that didn't play out, there's like thinking, okay, what are we missing here?
Yes.
And then there, you could see how it's evolving into,
yes.
well, then there must be some sort of afterlife where everything is made just.
Yeah.
Because God is all powerful.
Very well said. And that's, you know, so you see, there's all these different threads, but they don't connect the dots, and you know, we don't have someone connecting the dots, and we sort of have to imagine how that came to be. Like, Elaine?
I was just thinking about St. Paul and how in his writing, trying to explain to the people what happened after they died, where did they go, and then what happened to the people
yeah.
that were...
Yeah, Thessalonians,
the,
First
yeah.
Thessalonians.
Yeah, and
yeah.
It's very interesting that based on what we're doing now,
yeah.
they didn't have a stronger sense to me of that there was an afterlife.
They didn't seem to have it all. They were still
no.
like, how does this work? You know, how does this work? There's sort of what I see them asking in Thessalonians. I agree. And so you can see that this is still in its infancy, even
mm-hmm.
in the time of Jesus. And I think it's the resurrection of Jesus that really says, well, we got to figure this out. You know, it's like, wow, this is amazing. And first the amazement and then the reflection. Well, how, you know, what does this mean for us? What does this mean for Jesus? How, I guess, resurrection is really true. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Which we still can't really figure out. That resurrection of the body's got everybody's like, really, rising from the
yeah.
body is going to
mm-hmm.
rise from the dead?
Mm-hmm.
What about those people that got cremated and the one that was at, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody's like,
yeah.
we don't know.
And
right.
and we don't know. And that's, you know, the Gospels tell us one thing, which is that Jesus' body was both like and unlike
yes.
His earthly body when mm-hmm. before his death. So what that means, we don't know. But,
right,
and what
we
gets,
talk about, like, in Revelation, the new creation, the new Jerusalem.
Yes.
And
yeah.
what does that mean?
Yeah.
So we got a glorified body, we got a glorified creation, and all creation in Romans is groaning for, in labor pains, waiting
right.
for this new creation. So what
yes.
does this mean? So you start out with the Garden of Eden, and you end up with something that was better than what you started out with.
Yes.
This is God. I mean,
yes.
that's...
Yes.
Yeah.
Well said. All right. And... I think that that was the last one. Do we? It's not. We don't really have time to play bingo, but we can if you want. It's up to you. It's noon, so. But I thought that one was very good and helpful. I'm going to pass out. You know, this is, as I said, this is not full, and there are things that are not on here that we've talked about. You know, it's. But just as a sort of, help to reminding you about each text and some of the contributions. That's why I have the word "some" is in caps there.
There's a blank.
Okay. There should be enough for everybody. If there's not, I've got more here, I think.
We need to. But if you give us one, we can share.
No, I definitely will. I've got more than one. Okay, just give me a sec. Hold on.
Probably used to sharing.
All right.
Oh, wait. That's yours. No, it's yours. Huh? The brown. That's the idea.